we'll do it. Okay, so we're going to open the Boulder Town Planning Commission meeting for January 10th of 2019. That's funny. It's 7 minutes after six, and we have our commissioners here, right? And then are we expecting our alternate tonight? No, we're not doing anything like that. Okay, so, and then we also have Curtis, who's our zoning administrator with us. And we're going to go ahead and jump right into old business, which is approving the December minutes. Did anyone have any comments or issues?
So I just have one comment. I think on page 2, Peg, in the paragraph where Colleen's talking, you missed a not. The second to last sentence is, this Perry agreed but recognized challenges of people feeling deprived if they are selected. I think that meant not selected.
I couldn't really hear that.
Okay, I see. I think we found it.
I
think I
got it.
Okay. Thank you. And then, so, I make a motion to accept the December 2018 minutes.
A second motion to accept the minutes.
All approved. Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Perry. So then we'll move on to new business, and the first item on the agenda is to elect 2019 chair and vice chair people. And I'm not exactly sure how you do that.
Make nomination?
So, we could make a nomination. Does anybody want to make a nomination?
I'm all for nominating, keeping it as it is.
Can we do that? We can? Yeah, that's great. How's that sound, Perry?
Sounds great to me.
Okay, that was easy.
So do you nominate and then everyone else remove?
Okay.
Move to accept it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we nominate Perry Tancredi as the Boulder Planning Commission chairperson.
And you as vice chair?
Yeah.
Okay. Remove?
And so I make a motion that we vote on those two positions.
Okay.
Do I have a second?
Second the motion for
is that okay?
Chair Perry and Vice Chair Colleen.
Okay. And you need a voice vote?
Roll call vote.
Joseph Mies, aye. Colleen Thompson, aye.
Matt Cochran, aye.
Elizabeth Julian, aye.
Perry Tancredi, aye.
Okay. So then we'll move on to the open and public meetings training, and I think both Peg and Curtis, were you going
to? Oh, I sent you out
some
emails, just FYI, just on specialized parts of it.
Okay.
I have my test. My open meetings test. And
did it pass fail at home?
You guys need to know this too.
Do you for diploma?
You're welcome. You can pass these around and sort them off. Okay, so these are the high points of the Open and Public Meetings Act that you need to know as a public body. First of all, what constitutes a meeting? A quorum, convening of a public body, or both of the above? It's a convening of the public body, and it has to be a quorum, or it's not considered a public meeting. Okay, are all meetings open to the public, yes or no? It depends. Yes. An executive session in which discussions involving personnel, litigation, real estate, purchase, et cetera, et cetera. Those can be closed to the public. These are not likely to happen within the Planning Commission, so for all intents and purposes, any meeting you guys hold is a public meeting by definition, and therefore is subject to all the requirements of a public meeting. So, number three, is public notification required on all meetings? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely yes, all the time. Not less than 24-hour public notice shall be given, unless it's an emergency. And then you try to make notice, but only if it's an emergency. What is the difference between a regular meeting and a public hearing?
A.
Yeah, the test maker kind of got screwed up. A public hearing is held expressly for the purpose of listening to public input. It's the whole reason for being, is hearing public input. And conversely, regular meeting, everyone's invited to sit and observe. It's up to the body and their rules and procedures whether they allow comment and when they allow comment. But the public hearing is for the purpose of the public comment. Names and comments are recorded for the record, and that's why, even though I know who you are when you stand up to speak, it's got to be on the recording, and your name has got to be part of your comments. So that's why you stand up here and you give your name, and so for the recording. Okay, the format of the meeting, including public discussion, is up to the discretion of the chairperson. Okay, so number five, does a topic need to appear on the agenda to be discussed?
No.
B.
Because it's just if you make action on it, it has to be.
Right. You can talk about something, but if you're gonna, you cannot take any vote or final action unless it's on the agenda and people know about it. Number six, are the minutes and recordings public record?
Yes.
Yes, both are public record. They're protected only if there's a closed meeting, which again doesn't really apply to you guys. So all the minutes as well as the recording are public record. Can a public body convene electronically? Clearly, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There are some stipulations about, I think, what I read most recently in the current law, which if anyone wants to actually look at it, I have got it here. The body itself would need to come up with their own set of meeting procedures and rules on, like, does there have to be a core of people in this room, locations, et cetera, et cetera. But basically, yes, you can convene electronically. Again, it's got to be posted so the public knows about it. That is probably never going to happen here unless it's a matter of somebody just phoning in to partake of a meeting. So, and email correspondence is recognized and allowed. That's not considered a meeting. You're sending an email to each other. So that's in current code, which is nice to know.
Yeah.
Okay, what constitutes a quorum? It's a majority of the public body in your case. Out of five members, three members of the quorum. Is it illegal or unethical for a public body to meet together socially or by chance?
No.
No, it is not illegal nor unethical to meet socially or by chance as long as the purpose of the gathering does not involve discussions or decisions on public business. Okay. What constitutes notification? And this is my job. So I'll just tell you. 24-hour minimum notification of any regular meeting, posting notice at three public locations, written posting electronically on the Utah Public Meetings Notice Board, which is the state website, posting on the town website, and the state code does also include posting in a newspaper of record or notification to media correspondent, which I am. So I think we get around that one that way.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'd be having to close every single meeting in the Insider, and I don't think the town would really relish doing that. It's expensive. The public hearing, where you guys are supposed to be the main focus of the meeting, a 10-day notification of the public hearing is required through all those channels, and in addition to those, posted, it's required to be posted in the newspaper. Materials related to the public hearing are to be available 10 days in advance of the meeting. And I know that there have been times when complaints have been heard that maybe, I would say in all cases, the materials are available. They're usually available on the web, and absolutely they'd be available if you contact me, I can send you materials. Materials being things like, this is not a public hearing tonight, but things like what you're holding in your hand right there. That would be an example of something I can send to you. I can't send maps out, but I can send you printed documentation. And if you want to come in and look at a map, like in a subdivision situation, then the maps would be available to you. Sometimes electronically, if they're provided in that manner. If they're larger maps, you would pretty much just have to come in and see them here in the office. And since we have a new deputy town clerk who's going to be establishing regular hours, 2 hours a week, that's going to be an easier thing to happen. So those are the main things that I wanted to hear was notification and what is a public meeting and a public hearing. Do you have any questions about stuff?
Expand on a couple of your points.
Yeah.
The statute does not just delineate between a public meeting, which this is, and a public hearing when it comes to the recording. And the recording cannot be edited in any way, shape, or form. And so that's why I keep saying, you know, when we get into byplay with the audience, you don't know who's speaking. And if we were a larger town with more money, you would all have a microphone in front of you, and that recording would automatically know which commissioner was commenting, and then the public comments at the public forum in that microphone, and they state their name. I have no problem, and I don't think there's anything in statute says you can't do it from the chair, but if we're going to do that, then really what we need to do is have a good microphone to pick those comments up and state the name before you speak. Otherwise, because you cannot edit that recording, they can't go back and, well, I know who that voice is or whatever. And the recording is the true record of any public meeting or public hearing. The minutes are supposed to be a faithful summary, but if anything's ever challenged in court, the court will always go to the recording. That's considered the ultimate authority. So that's why we are trying to work out how we're going to take this input so that we get an accurate recording. It's just all about that recording. So, and you know, as we go along, maybe we get a better equipment or something to make it easier for you. When you said you can talk by email, I want to refine that a little bit. Email's kind of a little bit of a new thing, and the statutes are kind of catching up. What you can do is, because a quorum is three people in this body, now different public bodies have different sizes and different quorum amounts, but I'm just going to confine it to this body or to the town council because there are five members too. Any two of you can get together under any circumstances, it turns out, and you can talk about any matters coming before this body that you want to. Three of you cannot. Three of you is a meeting. It has to be public, and it has to be pursuant to notice. And so that's kind of the way it all shakes out. Lobby, or people in the legislature, they get one-on-one with each other, or whatever they do up there, because their quorums are different. But that's what you want to do. Now, email, of course you can email each other, but what if you started doing all five of you and discussing the issue and starting to decide the issue privately by email just between the five of you? I would advise you not to do that. I send emails out to all of you for information and everything, I advise you not to start to approach having a quorum, discussing an email back and forth, reply all. And so until we know more about how the email thing works, I'm just going to consider that tantamount to sitting in a room and doing the same thing. So that's it.
Okay, thanks. And the reason we did this is it's a requirement annually to have this.
Exactly. Good job, Ed.
Okay. Does anyone have any comments? Perry?
Nope.
Okay, so then we're going to move on to discussing our revised residential short-term rental ordinance. And I think we passed some of them around. And we each have copies here. And I don't know if anybody wants to bring up a discussion. I'm not going to read this because it's gotten fairly lengthy. I think everyone has probably read this. So does anybody have anything they want to say?
I have some comments.
Okay.
Six. So comments here, and I'm okay. Number one is in the first whereas clause, where it says Boulder Town Council is concerned with ensuring that the growth of tourism and the need for local accommodations is accomplished in a manner consistent with the general plan. I'm not sure, my question is, does the general plan really pushing for the growth of tourism, is that something that we also need to word in there, or can we just talk about local accommodations?
Well, my reading of that is, if the general plan actually discourages growth, then what that means is that if we're doing it in there, but consistent with the general plan, that we would discourage it. So,
gotcha.
I see how it could ethically be interpreted that we are encouraging growth, and I don't necessarily think that that's what we're doing.
Okay. Is there a way that we might reword that or consider figuring that out?
Yeah, I think it's worth considering.
Okay. And so from there, my number two, which is the fourth whereas clause, that doesn't read very smoothly to me. I'm not, I think we need to do a little work on that. I don't know if you have a copy there, Perry. Is your?
I do.
Yeah.
It's true.
I agree with it. I just feel like it's a little clunky. And
yep.
There's some typos, the and at the end and so on.
Yeah.
I think the and at the end is intentional. Each of the whereas clauses, except for the last one, has that.
Okay, something about, yeah, anyways.
Does that make sense? This one?
Number two?
Well, it's the fourth paragraph. Yeah, number two, the fourth paragraph.
And the need for long-term rentals, perhaps, in that second part after the second dash.
Okay, I'm a little lost. Where are you?
The fourth whereas clause.
Fourth whereas, okay.
Whereas said council recognizes the need of businesses, agricultural, tourist, and non-tourist related. And is that like a number two and the need for long-term rentals, or? There's a link there.
No, when you put dashes in there, it's a set off, like it could be in parenthetical. The need for business, and just what kind of business? Agricultural, tourism, and non-tourist related, three different kinds of business. The needs for business, the needs of long-term rentals to house the workforce, and the pricing conflicts. I mean, frankly, reword these whereas any way you want. They are not legally binding. They're kind of an expression of intent, that's all.
Okay. And the intent here is basically saying that we don't want short-term rentals to impact long-term rentals, am I correct?
Well, we're saying three things. We don't want short-term rentals to negatively impact the needs of businesses, the availability for long-term rentals to house the workforce in town, mm-hmm. and to negatively impact
impact the pricing of long-term rentals.
Okay, gotcha.
Once he read that,
okay, I'm good with that. The next thing I have is under number one, about defined documents, occupancy of a dwelling, for any period between 1 to 29 consecutive days pursuant of a conditional use permit. I originally, and I still think it's a good idea to have a minimum stay of at least 2 days, perhaps three, so that there's not a daily turnover in a short-term residential, which I think would impact the could impact the neighborhoods in a twice as busy, put it that way.
So
I don't know if anyone else thinks about that.
I believe we discussed that with the public at the last meeting, and some of the comments were that what's the difference between, a blue car coming in and out that day and a different one the next day. You're still having people coming and going, going out and doing forest activities. You're not increasing the number, you're just changing who they are. And so I thought we left it at that, but it doesn't make a difference.
That's kind of what I heard. It really was, there was no difference. That's why I left it that for that. And the other reason, like when Scotty came to one of the original hearings, it wasn't a public hearing, but a public comment. And what about my bedroom? I want to just rent my bedroom. A lot of VRBO guests are, they stay one night in a motel and then they stay one night in my bedroom. If you've got a whole house, maybe it makes more sense. I don't know. But I think where you guys left it at the time, change it if you want. Where you left it at the time was, what's the difference? Whether it's a blue car coming to the door, whether it's a blue or red car.
I also remember part of the discussion last time was that what that effectively does is reduce the number of nights total. And I think what we said is that's not necessarily our intent behind that. So I agree with what most people have said, that we discussed it last week or last month, but decided that one night is fine.
I think just to expand on that, Perry, the one night total is we don't want to make it harder for someone to collect that income by perhaps losing customers that couldn't afford to stay the 2 to 3 minimum.
One question I have on this one, I guess we don't care if someone stays 29 days, goes camping for a night, comes back for another 29 days.
That's a good question.
Well, if it's more than 30, isn't it then long-term rental and not even a short-term rental?
Well, the reason I'm asking is, I could just leave every 30th day.
Yep.
But I don't necessarily think we care about that. There's a little bit of a loophole that we can put wording in here that says, no more than 29 days in a 60-day period, and no more than 29 consecutive days. Like, we can work around it, but I don't know that we have to. There's a loophole here, but so someone stays in an Airbnb or VRBO for 29 days, and then comes back 2 days later and stays another 29 days, I think that's fine.
They just stay a whole 30, 31, or 2 months. Does it really matter? And the reason I veered off to 29 is because you cannot regulate month-to-month rentals under this. That's in a different category of property right.
I just see that loophole, and I can't think of any reason why we need to close it. I just wanted to bring it up to see if anyone else has any reason why we want to close it.
So I just want to go back to my point. The reason I'm bringing up the minimum stay is I haven't seen the research, but I'm concerned about keeping the integrity of our neighborhoods. And if there are 7 different parties coming into an Airbnb in a week versus 3.5, that makes a difference. It's a different amount of people I don't know who are at my neighbor's house, for example. and so on. So I think it's something worth considering a little more.
I think that this is one of those things where we're just going through this right now, and we're going to definitely go to public comment. And for me, all of these issues that we're talking about still, I want to see it go to the public as far as what we have right now and see what their comment is, too, before, you know, I think it's a valid point. And yeah. I think maybe somebody will either bring it up, you know, when, you know, as far as comments, or to bring it up there, to bring it up at that point.
Yeah, no, I'm curious about the public on that, too. I just wanted to make a note of it so it's in our minds. I just have a couple more things on these drafts. excuse me. The geographic areas of upper, middle, and lower Boulder, clearly defined.
Sure made me do it.
Yeah. good land survey.
You do it. No, you guys do it.
Yeah.
Well, I just threw something in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just wondering if it's fair population-wise. And if that's worth looking at, I can do some research on that if you like.
Totally. Somebody said cemetery.
Yeah.
I was thinking more of the middle, lower border. Yeah.
And I think we'll hear more on that too, as far as.
Yeah. I have maybe a different idea of middle Boulder versus lower Boulder. The line I think you put is on Burr Trail and Highway 12, so that would put people like Britain's Red House Farm and. Nelson, Mike Nelson, and so on. Those would be part of Lower Boulder, rather than Middle.
South Boulder.
Yeah.
Like you say, do some research. And however the line.
I think maybe we should just look at that a little more closely and make it more fair population.
You can call Salt Lake. I can put you in touch with a gerrymandering committee.
And then we'll, so was there going to be a map or something of that too? Were we going to see a picture of that? Or will be at some point, I guess we can figure it out.
Yeah, we should get a map out and actually, I think, discuss it
more
accurately. So in section 7, section 5, F, where we're talking about the written permission from any neighbor within 300 feet. How'd you come up with the 300 feet? How if we, that distance?
I plucked it out of the hurricane statute, didn't
it? Was after
is it?
Statute.
Yeah. Okay. I think we should look more closely, too. I think considering that we're dealing with three different densities here, and just look at sort of lot size and figure out what is maybe the more appropriate number for Boulder, if that is it. Rather than just boilerplating it out. And then finally, in the last thing is in number 6 under property management. I think it's all really good to me. The only thing that I see missing is, at least with fire stuff, is a lot of people like to barbecue, outdoor grill on Airbnbs, and I wonder if there's some sort of safety thing we might put in with that, because that's a fire hazard on a deck in a windy day if someone doesn't know how it works around here.
And similarly, an open fire pit.
Fire pit, yeah. So that sort of outdoor fire sort of thing. Other than that, I think
so we might, go ahead. On that one, maybe we just add a clause under fire extinguishers to say an additional fire extinguisher for any outdoor fire pit or barbecue.
Yeah.
Shovel and water.
Other than that, I think I think it's a really good start. Not knowing what the public thinks about it, obviously, but in my read of it. So.
I thought so too. I thought you did a great job, Curtis. Yeah. Okay, so Elizabeth, does anyone have any comments? Okay, and Perry?
No, I agree. I'm happy with this. I'm excited to hear what the public thinks.
Okay, so just to reiterate this, basically, we have a couple of things that we're going to talk about, and then on the agenda is public comments. So just keep your comments in mind because we want to hear from all of you since you all came. But since there is no comments on our part, basically, I'd like to move on so that we can come back to you. And so what we're going to do right now then is we have an update from Josie on the general plan, their work group, so I'll turn that over to you.
Okay. We met last Monday and started going through item by item that we had assigned to each member. We got about halfway through the general plan before it was late, so we are having another meeting this Monday, January 14th, to finish going over those assignments and the work that's been done so far. And that's pretty much all I have for an update.
Okay.
You know, we're working through it, and we're going to have a Word document this week that we'll start working on, and once we have more information, we'll bring it forward.
Okay. Are you you're okay with that? Yeah, so we'll just hear from, we'll go ahead and put you back on the agenda for February.
Yeah, we'll just update everybody.
And then you'll have probably a lot more information.
Josie, you said that the whole thing was happening on Google Docs. Is it possible to have all of us be just read-only so we can just be seeing it as we want?
I'm not sure. When it comes to, we have two people on the committee so that we're avoiding a quorum.
But it's not to do anything other than just be able to view it and read it as you're working on it without, you know, you can do it through Google Docs, you can do, you know, that
sure.
You have the ability
that's how
to get
with the
view.
It's, if you see any problem with that, I don't see any problem with sharing the working document with the planning commission as we're going along.
No, sure.
Yeah.
And the question about, I mean, I think you're a working group, not a public body committee, so I think that, I don't think you have the same quorum and those requirements and any of that.
Right, it would just be...
Having said that, I'm like, I think we're just calling you a working group, right?
Yeah,
it's a working group,
yeah.
And we're reporting anyway.
It's no different than the committees that you formed last winter that met.
Well, we're using the information from all those open
right.
committees, you're right, from last year and all of those.
No statutory notice requirement or quorum requirement, anything to it. Yeah. So you can, I think you should share as you go along,
sure.
Keep them up to date.
And then, okay, and then it'll come before the public with it, I mean, every once in a while too,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. All right, thank you, Josie. Okay, so then we have... a conceptual plan from Curtis for the Arts Council, from the Arts Council. Do you?
So, a little skyscraper in mind, yeah? Jackie Smalley, has approached the Arts Council to informally partner with her and talk to me about how this would fit in the ordinances. And so what I want to do, since they have been talking about this for maybe 2 or 3 months now, is give a conceptual, purely conceptual plan for what she might have in mind and what might fly. One of the possibilities would be, it would be down at the Red Barn. And initially it was going to be remodel the Red Barn into a performing arts and visual arts space. You have a stage, sound, lighting, and so you could do any kind of, you know, anything that requires a stage, a dance, whatever, Raven's plays, the whole thing. It would seat around 100 people. Her initial explorations of the barn show that there's no foundations around the exterior, and some of the slabs are kind of incomplete, and in order to make it four season, it would be, it just started getting really expensive, so as an alternative, her architects are looking at an entirely freestanding building next to the barn, not next to the barn, but maybe just south of the barn, right in there. And it would be, and that building would be one story tall. It would, a little preliminary drawing they've done here would seat 126 people on the floor, a fairly generous stage. They have two bathrooms, a small kitchenette, as, just as this building does. And it would double as display space for art openings and visual arts, as well as performing arts, as well as anybody in the community wanted to use it for the ballet classes for the kids or the adults, or Elizabeth wants to use it for the school for production. So what she envisions is a very broad mission for a place like that. And it would just be in addition to the community center, which has been handling all of this so far and doing, I think, a really good job of it. But she has a vision of being able to expand that into the performing arts too. The place that it fits would be in the use definitions, would be under the table of uses, a recreational facility. And a recreational facility is defined as a place, either indoor or outdoor, designed and equipped for the conduct of sports and leisure time activities. So singing and dancing is leisure time, I guess that would qualify.
Could be sport.
The table of uses allows it as a conditional use in GMU and commercial. Jackie's property, of course, is GMU, Greenbelt Multiple Use. So that's about as far as she's gotten so far. Everything is conceptual, but I'm not going to be here for the February meeting. And if in the event she has, her architects have something to bring before the Planning Commission, because you're the ones that approved conditional uses by March, then I want to prepare you now so that you have a heads up on it. And I can answer any questions that you might have or the public may have. And that's about it.
What was the height of the building?
Anybody have any comments? I don't even have a profile sketch yet, but it'd be one story, but it would be high enough to so that you didn't bump your head when you're on the stage dancing or jumping, you know. But how high exactly, I don't know, maybe this high or, yeah, it's one story. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it'd have two bathrooms, a small kitchenette. Kind of kicking around the idea of a little conference room or office space that would be available to public groups to meet. Like, your group wanted to meet someplace. Of course, you've got all of this, but, you know, an arts group or whatever, anybody. But that's kind of like, that's pushing it over the 4,600 square foot. So the cost started to get a little prohibitive. So I think it's going to end up being fairly simple, but they probably will keep in mind that what about 25 years from now, let's have a wall or two where that are not containing all the plumbing and electrical. So if you did want to expand, there's at least on paper a way to do that to accommodate, you know, two or three decades from now what the town may, or whoever's doing this might be.
So is this a community space, or would you be renting the space?
Say that again.
Is it a community space, or would you be renting the space?
It's community space.
Okay.
And I don't think she foresees rental. I mean, the Arts Council or whoever wants to use it to produce do something there. If Bren wanted to do something there, you know, they could charge if they want. The Arts Council's mission tries not to charge, tries to do donations only, and only would have an admission fee if we had a performer that you just kind of had to cut the nut or something like that. But basically, it wants to be for the community and not like a paid space, ticket booths and all that. And the architects from Boulder, Colorado, so they actually had a little lobby entry and a little ticket book also. I said, nah. So any questions from anyone? Like I say, it's all tentative. She didn't have a cost yet. So, but I think she, if she can pull it off, I think she's pretty committed to doing it. And if she does, then there are some of us in Arts Council and whatever are going to try and do some fundraising to help participate maybe in some of the, like the stage and some things like that, like we already have a sound system and, you know, kind of bring our forces together, at least cooperate to the degree we can.
Great.
Any questions about the ordinance or any of that?
I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of the information on it. I think it's a great idea. Okay. So are we, so on this, you should put new business. Does that mean we're talking about next month? Okay, so we need to talk about next month's meeting. So are,
Yeah, once, what you see right now in front of you, which is continuation of...
Yeah, because we're going to listen to public comments, so we'll know more about next month's meeting as far as the residential short-term rental. Does that sound right? Mm-hmm. So we'll put that back on because we'll get public comment. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to go to public... Okay, so we'll do that. And then Josie will be back next month with the general plan work group. Mm-hmm. And did you say, Curtis, that you think it'll be March before this other one comes up? Do you want to put that on the agenda?
The Arts Center?
Yeah, or do you want to wait till March?
I think I'll wait till you're back and see where she's at. You know, just up to Jackie. She said she would love, if she could, to break down sometime this spring, late spring if possible. So, if the pieces fell into place, the cost was right, the drawings looked good to her, it's possible to be back in March on it.
What would she be interested in maybe if we put her on the agenda for her to come back next month and talk about it? Or do you want to wait a little?
I think she'd rather wait until she has drawings that she can show on and applicate. I don't know if she wants to talk about it until she's a little more sure.
Okay.
I'll let her know if she wants to, then certainly go ahead and put her on the agenda.
As far as the RSTR, is it time for a public hearing, or are we still have work to do? Because we didn't have a whole lot of work that we did tonight on it.
Well, I wanted to hear what is here tonight, because we have a pretty good group before. Can we do that?
So perhaps before we decide on this business,
can we do that?
Sure.
We'll just change that. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and open it up to public comments, and then we'll finish off the new business. And I know we say this every meeting 5 times, but if you'll come to the podium so it can be recorded on the tape recorder, the way that the state has asked us to, say your name and make your comments. And we appreciate all of you coming here, and I hope you all have something to say. Yeah. Can that say that?
Yeah. Do you want me to move this closer?
Thank you all for all of the time you've given to all of this.
Say your name.
Oh, I'm Scotty Mitchell. I'm a resident of Boulder for 22 years now. And, I feel like the restriction on the short-term rentals already, the baddie is people investing in houses. Can't see. The baddie you've already wiped out of investment buyers coming in and buying up houses sheerly to rent them, which is what so many towns are suffering from. And you've done it already in the first, when you restrict it to people living in their own homes. Bit of residence for at least half of the year. So I feel a lot of the other restrictions are not helpful, because I feel, right, for me, for example, okay, gosh, there's only 4 RSTRs in my part of the town, and I'm not ready to rent, and what do I do? Do I have to run for a conditional permit? So in 2 years, when I'm ready, when I'm old, and I don't have an income, and I need that income, do I have to do that now because they're all going to be filled up? I mean, I feel like the restrictions are impractical. And say a young person has the opportunity to buy a house because they can rent out part of it to pay the mortgage. That's huge. But they're all going to be filled up. You know, anybody, if you're talking in a year, they're probably going to be filled up. And so the idea of the benefit of, I feel like Airbnbs benefit a ton of people. Yes, they're more unknown people on the roads. They're going to stay in hotels and be unknown people on the roads if they're not staying in the Airbnb. So I mean, my neighborhood, you know, I see people come down the road all the time from Circle Cliffs. And it's like, sorry, the world changes. We will be seeing people, if we want people to hike here, that we don't know on the roads. So I just feel like that is, I just feel it's not practical in terms of it being a useful Airbnb, being an asset. We could look at Airbnbs as an asset for the community. And it's also an asset for people to have a different experience of Boulder than just as in a hotel. I mean, Airbnbs have raised the quality of so many people's lives, both the people that are renting that get to know other people, but also, I mean, I have an experience of being able to cook in a town which has great food, for example. I mean, I wish we could look at Airbnbs as a positive thing if it's not about investors coming and buying out all the houses. But I just feel that restriction is going to put a kibosh on, to me, the purpose of it would be to allow people like me, as they get old, who obviously are going to need, I mean, we're fairly low income here. And many people might need that to support their lifestyle, their living. And so I feel like this number thing just puts a total kibosh on that positive aspect of Airbnb being to help locals and help them buy houses, because that's huge if you had a little place to help your mortgage. And with the restrictions before this, already you're not talking about taking away a long-term rental from somebody. So that's already not part of the equation here. And I also think the when it limits it to half a year, whatever the date, how many days were, I just think that's like, why penalize people who are trying to make ends meet? Why have you only allowed to rent your Airbnb out for, you know, 160 days? Why? What is the purpose of that other than kind of being a penalty? I mean, you know, why? I don't understand the why of that at all. And just the other thing, just for the last thing about the owner must be there to meet, maybe that's a good thing. I'm not complaining about, but as a multiple user of the same Airbnb that I go to, I think, you know, there are times when, you know, if you've been there more than once, you do not need the owner to be there, because the owner also might be working. I mean, you know, everybody's trying to make a buck. They're all working, and I think that having to have the owner meet the people is, I don't think it's a bad idea, I just don't think necessarily it's a necessary idea. Everybody now has those little lock things, and they have a perfectly big folder of everything you're going to need in their homes. I mean, I think it should be required that there's information. The necessary information is there, public, easy to read, available, but I don't know about that. Having to meet, because a lot of people work. The people that, yeah, if I go to Salt Lake and I'm in an Airbnb, which I just found one in a quiet neighborhood, yay! The guy works. He's not going to be there when I, you know, he's not going to be there until after 5. So I don't know if that's, I feel like all the information you need to give them should be readily available and all that, but I don't think the personal meeting is necessary. Some people would prefer it, but I don't think it's necessary. But anyway, so we'll see with how it all pans out. But I know, I mean, like, if I were to remain, I am probably moving, and if I were to live here, I'd go, oh my God, I have to be one of the 4, or I can't stay here anyway. And just the timing of that is, I just find that unnecessary. I think, yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right. Just questions made, comments made. Steve Cox, on 5B2, where two dwellings exist, it's statement of how owner occupancy. Are we talking accessory dwellings? Because I was under the impression when we did accessory dwellings, they're for long-term rental. So I don't know in what situation two dwellings would exist. Other than that, and I'm not in favor of using our long-term ADU rentals as short-term rentals. So if that's what that's getting at, I'm not sure I'm in favor of that.
Which section is that, Steve?
It's 5B, number 2, where two dwellings exist.
Yeah, and you're saying that you don't think a second dwelling or an ADU should be used for a short-term rental.
Right. That's sort of what we did ADUs for, was my impression, is to help with the long-term rental. Now, if those are all now going to be converted into short-term rentals, I would disagree with what we tried to do. So that's one comment. And then I'm a little concerned about written permission from any neighbor within 300 feet. And so this is 5F1 and 2 can be withdrawn by said neighbor with 90 days notice and without cause. Little concerned about neighbors determining what you can do on your property. I can see a notification as part of the conditional use permit and having neighbors have a chance to voice their opinion, but this seems like it's more than that. So that's all I have.
Can I make a comment on that? Two dwellings?
Mm-hmm.
I think we talked about the fact that for two dwellings, if you had an RS. RSTR was that some you can't take the where the owner lives and the other. I mean, if you have two dwellings, that you can't use both of them. I think that's what we talked about as far as Airbnbs or an ADU and a. So I'm not sure how that needs to be written, but I thought that's kind of why that was put in.
Well, what I was trying to get at there is you had a discussion about, well, if you have an ADU and a primary dwelling, you're older and you need less space.
Right.
You move into the ADU and then rent out the other dwelling. But you didn't really address
Right. Not
being able to, in fact, you said kind of, well, you can rent either one. So I was just kind of trying to imagine all the permutations, and that's what you get into here when you try, like, well, you do this, and how do you state it all? So you need to kind of take the comments, weigh them, and then decide, well, what can you really do if you have an ADU on the property?
Does that kind of make sense as far as why we just need to write it a little better?
Well, I think it needs to be written in a way, this is my opinion, we did an accessory dwelling unit for long-term rentals.
Right.
And now it seems like we're allowing them to be used for short-term rentals. I don't agree with that. That's my point. So, however.
So my recollection of our discussion is that we did the ADU ordinance first. And it was always my intention and my impression that the council was going to write the residential short-term rental ordinance to allow the ADUs to be used for short-term rentals, but limited like we have. So it's written in a way to allow that. I think that's intentional. If we want to change it, I think we can, but I think it's written the way it's intended.
That is kind of the way you left it. And then what I was trying to figure out too is, well, and that's why that paragraph gets confusing. It needs to be clear because it's also about, well, which one can you live in, which one can you rent, and so we're going to have to give me more guidance on Steve's comment and on the whole, how the whole thing fits together.
Okay.
Yeah, and we're going to have that conversation
to clarify at some point. Can someone have their physical dwelling, ADU, and a RSVR?
No. That's not, I didn't.
Okay, but we need to make that one.
You can't have more than two dwellings. Two dwellings is absolute max. You have a primary and a second, an accessory.
You can't have a room out in the house.
How do you deal with that vis-a-vis our short-term rentals?
Okay, public comment, sorry. I'll go next. Okay.
You state your name.
Peter Benson. So, I guess the comment about growth at the beginning, it's sort of a little bugaboo about growth. I think generally people are kind of worried about growth. Growth is going to happen, and we can discourage, you know, growth. We can guide it, but, you know, people are going to drown. It's a hazard. I was thinking about this today, and there's sort of three categories of RSTR. One is renting a room in your house. One is renting your whole house while you're away somewhere else. And the other is renting an ADU, like a separate building on your property. And also I think about the amount of friction that this ordinance would apply to someone renting. So I feel like we should apply the least amount of friction, or, you know, make it least hard for someone just renting a room in their house. Maybe a little harder for someone renting their whole house out. Maybe even harder for somebody renting an ADU out. It's just a thought. I'm not sure how that would be incorporated, but it's just a thought. And I think limiting it to maybe, let's skip that. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, do you have any other comments?
Yeah, I guess I'm not.
My name is Donna, and I have a few different comments, some that I just are in relation to what I heard about tonight. Chapter 10, number 1, single family legal lot. So is that referring to just lots that have one dwelling on them? Is that all we have in Boulder? Do we have some lots that already have more than one dwelling, larger lots, farms, etc.? And would they be excluded from not being allowed to have?
I'm sorry.
Number one.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Thank you. Or would it come under something else? That was my one question on that wording there. And I'm having a really hard time with how you're going to limit these, because it seems like if there's only four allowed, you better be very clear about the day and time and place that you're taking those, because you might have a line. So perhaps you may want to do a lottery, open it up and say this will be open for 10 days, and we will just lottery for it, because you don't really want a mass riot, you know? And you want people feeling like, oh, your friend got it, you know, or someone on the board got it, or that there was any, you want to be really careful about being upfront about the whole thing. And then I wondered if all the existing Airbnbs already in Boulder, in the town limits, if a zone has more than four already, does that mean they don't get any? Or are you going to do four plus all the others? Are the others going to be grandfathered? And do they now have to have a conditional use permit and follow these rules, or will they be grandfathered the way they are? So I just kind of feel like there's a lot of questions.
Hmm.
And then we have where an owner is an entity or corporation, you're presuming that there's going to be a majority interest. What if there's an equal interest between equal partners? Where's that again? Oh, I'm sorry. I should be telling you. Number four. Number B, number one. And I was a little confused about five and where two dwellings exist. You've already got the owner living there for half a year. So I don't know if I have much I can say about that. I just thought that's not, there might be something you need to look at that a little more.
Yeah.
Sorry, what's your concern?
I think you guys had a concern about it, and I was trying to address it, but I probably don't have an answer. And then moving to the back page, property management number six. Most Airbnbs that I've stayed at, you just don't see. You might meet the person in the morning, like the last one, gave me a code, I got there, they were already in bed, I met them in the morning. Other places, you may not meet them at all because you get everything emailed to you. You have your codes given to you. You have all your the rules for the everything is listed on the site. Plus, they'll probably be in the house. I think it's really pretty standard that everyone who rents an Airbnb, now not presuming that all of these will be done through Airbnb, generally they are, they'll see something like that. But so I can see these being rules for if you're not already with Airbnb, but usually if the person isn't, everything about them, you know who you're going to be renting from, you have their email to start with, you have a way of, a lot of times they'll even give you a cell if you need it. So I don't know if you want to make it mandatory that they have to be there. And that came up while we were in housing. We thought that was a really good idea when we were first starting this last year in the group because of a way to make sure that... Okay, sorry. We thought that would be a way of making sure someone owned it and lived here too. So I don't know if you already have that taken care of.
Don, will you go back on the last comment you're saying because I got distracted, sorry. I mean, what you're talking about right now, which one are you referencing?
I just said most of this is already done for you on Airbnb, and that you don't necessarily have to do it. We thought it was a good idea to help because that would make sure somebody was there from the town. I don't know if it needs to be mandatory.
Okay.
Suggestion. And I had an idea about the fire restrictions because when I worked at the visitor center last year, we would always get the fire restrictions, and a lot of you know about those anyway, that you should have all the county fire restrictions should be followed because that will tell you whether you can have a fire in a pit or not, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on how much drought we have. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. Thank
you. Anyone else have any comments? Okay, well, I think we're going to call...
Mark, did you have any comments?
What?
I don't want to put you on the spot, but did you have any comments?
Just okay, since I'm standing up, I guess.
We were going to move on, but I knew you were helping that woman, so.
Yeah, she has Hayden's cat, got in her car. It's
been in the school probably 6 times today, 7 times yesterday.
That was an emergency. Mark Nelson, I'm kind of surprised that you've done quite a good job here.
Thank you.
I'm pleasantly surprised. I listened to some of these comments and there's some new comments, but I think this is a good start. I do think that. I don't think you're going to be able to satisfy everybody, right? You're not going to be able to meet everybody's concerns. I think you need to be more conservative up front. You can always go a little change things later down the road. But I think up front, this is a big enough issue. I think you should be pretty conservative up front. And then, down the road, if things don't work, maybe you can make some changes. But I would make all the changes up front. Because I think it's Airbnb, in my personal opinion, I don't like them. I think that they're an attack on our communities, you know, and I see them as a commercial use, you know, not as a, they're not like a ADU or a rental, like, you know, like those. And this idea of like the renters never meeting the rentees, I don't like that either. You know, at least if you're renting to somebody and they come and get the key or something, you meet them, you can kind of get some vibes off them. You know, you don't even, so people are going to be renting houses, you don't even know who it is. You know, who knows who might come out of those places. And so I kind of like the idea of maybe somebody of the personal touch, you know. And but I think you're making a good start here. You know, I think that work in progress, they keep thinking about it. I like the comments. I like the work you're doing. You've done so much. So, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so...
I have a comment.
Okay.
Is there a mic here, or what's going on?
Just right there.
Talk nice and loud, Scott.
It'll
all work. Right. My name is Scott Aho, and I live here in Boulder. And first of all, I'd like to say that I think Airbnbs are really nice things for communities. I've always had really nice stays staying in them. I've been associated with renting them out, and I think Airbnb is a really good organization that if you deal with people with that or checked in and have the background of the information that you know a lot about who you're running to. I think it's a lot better. I think you can control growth in the town, but it's really hard to control tourists coming into your town. I think our area is getting more popular all the time, and it's not fair just to say, oh, all the tourists have to stay in Torrey or Escalante or wherever. But it's also part of our responsibility to deal with the tourists that are coming in. I personally would much rather see tourists spread out and dealt with people on a personal level across the town than developing tourist ghettos, which would be where, you know, even if there's small motels or whatever, if they're all concentrated in one part of the town, it's just a cluster of too many cars. And I think that's a much bigger impact than having tourists spread out more across the town, where their money goes to people in the town which need the money. It's a source of income for individuals, and the money goes directly to them. It doesn't go to some 7-unit motel where you then go and make your minimum wage there. Most of it comes to you. And from the point of view of somebody that might be running those in, my experience is always interesting. I'd love to talk to people from Frankfurt or James or wherever, South Africa or Indiana or whatever. It's interesting for me to have those. They enrich my life. And that's kind of been my experience with Airbnbs. And I'm all for it. And the idea of restricting them to like four Upper Valley, four, it just seems ridiculous. Let the market dictate how many Airbnbs there are. So that is my feeling. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead and close public comments. And thank you for all your comments, Ollie. I mean, we really did want to hear from everybody. So we'll go back to new business. And I think that we need to just put a discussion again on the revised residential short-term rental or ordinance. Are you going to be here next month?
Nope.
Okay, so...
Snowbird.
Okay. don't think I'm going to be here next month either. It's good to follow to use your time with same as Curtis's.
I think Perry will be here enough. So, but I do think that, I mean, we do want to put this back on and continue talking about it. As far as that goes, right?
Well, I think we have enough to chew on from the public comment.
Yep, I think so too.
Yeah.
Questions. Are you okay with that, Perry?
I'm not okay with it.
Well, just putting this back on next month and talking about it again. Okay, that sounds good. Okay.
And then, as you've listened to the public tonight on these informal comments, and then you can talk next time, and then give me notes what you want on the revisions, and then I can bring it back to you however long revised, and then from there, I guess probably you won't be having a public hearing quite yet in March until you get a new draft you like and more, so, okay. Anyway, that's all I suggest. Next time, talk and give me your comments. I'll give you a revision for March.
Okay, that sounds good.
So, question? Mm-hmm. So you're probably not looking at a public hearing until April, at the least? I mean, the earliest?
Maybe March.
If well, we can't, because if Curtis is in here next time to do a revision, it would have to be. At least that was what I heard you say.
Yeah, if you refine your thoughts in February, then I'll commit them to a draft in March that you can then discuss and then decide whether you want to schedule it for public hearing in April.
That's how it would work, yeah.
Whatever.
Okay. I don't need to know that right now, but I just want you to
Flow. Okay. It looks like something we can work on. Is there anything else?
The next meeting is February 14th, in case anyone needs to make arrangements. I don't know, I'm just throwing it out.
You look great, Jess. Let's keep it that. I'm not either, but we'll figure it out.
I'm going to get your costume.
Okay. So, does anyone have a question? Can we close the meeting? I second that.
Just deny? Roll call?
If they're just opening and closing a meeting, do they still need roll call vote?
For now, yes. There's kind of an executive thing that I got to look into. I know it's like Springdale's minutes. They do their approval of minutes opening and closing a little bit different, but everything else they do roll call. And I don't know exactly why, but so let's just be on the safe side. You don't have to do a roll call, but everybody just go, I individually, and you write it down.
Oh.
But we're on the record too, what am I saying? Get on the record.
Okay.
So are we finished?
Okay.
So do you want us to do a roll call?
Yeah, just everyone say aye.
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 Okay.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks, Perry.
Thanks, you guys. This is coming more. I like this.
I don't think